It's the early hours of April 21st, 1967, and all programmes on Greek radio have been suspended. In their place, military marches are being broadcast. Most people are asleep, but for the few early risers like sociologist Yerasimos Notaras, it's clear that something's changed overnight.
I was at home and I received the call from my cousin, who was working early in the morning. It was 4 or 5 o'clock of the morning, and he was going to his work, and he saw the tanks. Everywhere in Athens, at the crucial crossroads and so on, were soldiers and tanks. So he called me, and he said, "I think that something very serious is happening." Of course, I understood that it was a coup.
By sunrise, the whole country was in the hands of a small group of Greek colonels. They had arrested the acting prime minister and all the MPs of the Socialist Party, which would most likely have won in national elections the following month. A week after they took power, the military held a press conference, attended, among others, by the BBC. Speaking through a translator, the coup leader, Colonel George Papadopoulos, explained why the army had abolished civil liberties and dissolved all political parties.
Kindly do not forget that we're facing a patient, just like the patient on the operating table, who, unless he is fastened to the operating table, cannot be cured of his disease.
John Morgan, BBC Panorama. The minister has very accurately described Greece as being a patient strapped to a table. What does he think of the view that the only thing wrong with the patient was that there might have been liberal victory in the elections on May the 28th?
Παρεμβάντας δια προσωπικούς λόγους.
The danger which our country was facing was not the victory of the party which you are insinuating.
In the first weeks of the dictatorship, according to Amnesty International, at least 8,000 people were arrested.
This is Ivor Jones calling Radio Newsreel from Athens. Little's to be seen of the army now, but it makes its presence heard. At night, there's sporadic firing. Arrests are still going on, apparently late at night, at least in some cases. It's generally believed some political prisoners are now being moved to penal islands in the Aegean. Newspapers have reappeared, but not all of them. Only one makes any comment, and is said to be close to the army. It says that democracy in Greece has now fallen asleep. And it goes on, the army wants to protect the nation and its moral and material welfare. Let us all help the army and put our political beliefs aside for a while.
A dusk curfew was imposed. Church attendance became compulsory. Miniskirts and long hair were banned, along with a long list of books, including Dostoevsky, the Greek-Russian dictionary, and even Plato. Yerasimos wasn't prepared to accept the situation.
Dictatorship is always something which is not acceptable. Even the last article of the Constitution said that the safeguard of the democracy is the duty of every citizen. And I felt that it was not acceptable that in the 20th century there was a dictatorship in my country.
Within hours of learning of the coup, a large group of friends, many of whom represented the intellectual elite of Athens, gathered to decide what to do.
At that moment, there was no plan. We were just discussing. The next days, we created a resistance organization, Democratic Defense, and then we prepare our manifest, if you want. The main line was that the dictatorship must be fought against by all means, because a non-democratic situation, as was the dictatorship, that came by the force of violence, army and tanks, will never left power without forcing them to go out.
So when your manifesto said that you wanted to rid the country of the junta by any means, that included violence?
Of course. Of course. You know, if your opponent has arms, you cannot fight him by words.
Members of the Democratic Defence Resistance Movement began planting explosive devices in public buildings and squares around Athens.
It was just bombs intended to show that there was an opposition to the junta. It was not to blow up a building or something like that.
Who was responsible for making the bombs? Were you part of that group?
I personally was in a position that I had the responsibility of all of them, who were preparing bombs.
So you were in charge of the bomb-making squad?
Yes.
Weren't you scared that there might be civilian casualties?
Oh, it's so easy to prevent that. The people who put them took all the necessary precautions.
There are no records of any casualties as a result of the bombings, but then the attacks were never acknowledged by the junta or the strictly controlled Greek press. Hierasimos still believes that those acts of resistance helped undermine the rosy picture the generals wanted to project to the outside world. But there were plenty of people who were very comfortable with the new leadership, as the BBC reported at the time.
To be frank, much of the bourgeoisie is perfectly happy with the colonel's takeover. They fear communism. They like the anti-union laws which ban strikes. And they want to go on making money without the dangers of party political turbulence. At least some respond to the colonel's talk of national reformation. None of these people at a theatre party given by Mr. Skelitzis seemed to be suffering. They were there to see a performance of choruses from classical tragedy.
We had many examples of persons who get profit of the junta, profited in the economic level. Many entrepreneurs, many builders, many investors who are in relation of the junta and get profit of the situation.
Leaving aside the politics of it, do you think that they did a bad job of managing the Greek economy?
Everywhere, not only the economy. In every sector, I should say.
Their argument was that Greece benefited economically, that it was prosperous under their rule.
It was the global situation at that moment that was in the up, as they say. So Greece took their part. But it was not the fact that the junta made that situation. It was the general situation everywhere, worldwide at that moment. And then we knew that afterwards, most of the dictators took advantage personally in the economic situation. And they left Greece with their money and so on, South America. When you have a dictatorship, it can never be profitable for the society. It perhaps can be profitable for a small part of the population who get profit from the fact that a dictatorship can do things by force.
And despite the booming economy, it was clear to all levels of society that it was extremely dangerous to criticise the government. Speaking to members of the public a few years into the dictatorship, this BBC reporter found people reticent.
Does it worry you at all that there's no apparent prospect of elections?
Of any election?
Elections.
Oh, I can say my opinion at this point. Let's forget it.
Forget it?
Yeah.
What do you think of what the government's achieved?
I don't know.
I beg your pardon?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah.
But surely everybody must know what the government's done.
But I don't know.
What do you think of what the government's achieved here?
You picked the wrong man to ask the right question.
Why are you the wrong man? Why is it the right question?
Well, if I give you the proper answer, you might not see me here tomorrow.
In every building, there was an informant. Police took information of what journal you were reading, with whom you were acquainted, what you were saying at the taverna, and so on. Everyone, every Greek, knew that it existed. That's why everyone was very suspicious, and he knew that if he openly expressed his opinion, he would be arrested.
Did you see friends, family, neighbours get arrested?
No, the first arrest that I knew was myself.